Support made possible by Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic's annual series of crop insurance and grain marketing meetings are currently underway across the Midwest. Go to www.sfarmmarketing to register for a meeting near you.
From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 13th day of January 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, we'll check in with the folks at the Andersons to see what's been up in the cash grain market since the USDA released its reports Friday morning. Well, speaking of which, we'll hear Todd Hubbs' assessment of those and his thoughts about the potential trade agreement that could come on Wednesday of this week, right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago today, March corn up 3 3/4 of a cent, settled at $3.89 and a half. The May at $3.96 and a quarter, 3 1/2 lower. July at $4.02 and 3/4, up 3 1/4. And December corn at $4.04 and 3/4, 2 cents higher for the day. January soybeans down 5 3/4. Settlement price there at $9.29 and a quarter. The March at $9.42 and a quarter, 3 3/4 lower. May $9.55 and a half, down 3 1/2. And September down 4 1/4 at $9.68. November beans next year, $9.69 and 3/4, down 5 cents. The bean oil futures, 43 cents lower. The bean meal, up 30 cents. Wheat futures, soft red, July, 1 1/2 cents lower at $5.66 and 3/4. The hard red, July at $5.08 and a quarter, down 1 1/2. Live cattle futures in the Feb, down 87 and a half cents at $126.55. Feeders at $146.02 and a half, down $1.57 and a half. And lean hogs, $1.35 lower at $65.90. Crude oil, down $1.02. Ethanol futures up 0.18. That's 1 1/8 cents. And heating oil down 2 9/10. Diesel fuel, that is. Gasoline just about unchanged. It's at $1.65 and 9/10 of a cent. Natural gas at 2.19, down 0.012 for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 70 points higher. And the gold futures down $8.60. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to take a look at these numbers and to give us some insight into what they might mean for the marketplace. Hey, thanks so much, and hope you have some good things happening for you on this Monday.
Well, the corn market did. We saw some follow-through buying. Friday was spectacular from a technical point of view. We made a new low and closed higher on this little downdraft we saw. And even in the December, probably a little bit more encouragement there where we had an outside up day, and now we're challenging the highs we made here on January 2nd. So technically it looks fairly well. We've been recording a price low about every 5 to 6 weeks, and that kind of fits that criteria. So we just need to follow through here. March corn needs to pop out this 392 area. If we could do that, we could challenge $4 technically. But corn's taking over leadership here. I think wheat gets fired as being the leader. Wheat did not do a good job leading this thing higher. Wheat corn spread did reach that $1.80 resistance level, and so we kind of look for corn to gain on wheat here over the near term. So got through the report there Friday. The analogs tried to press it, and could not keep it lower, had to buy their way out of it to creating that price reversal. But the interesting thing, too, on those numbers, after it's all been digested, when you go back and look, is they revised some of the 2018 numbers slightly. So it kind of opens the door here that we could see some revisions for quite some time on 19. In fact, one source that I rely on quite a bit that's kind of in the know a little bit told me about 2 months ago that this 19 crop won't really have a final number until January of 21. So that kind of sets the stage here. We're going to continue to have some moving parts for quite some time to come here, Todd.
In the short term, your expectations are corn will lead. So that asks the question then, for Wednesday, when the U.S. and China sit down and signed the phase one, and you know, you can't call it a trade deal because it's not quite that. It's a memorandum of understanding. Will there be corn and DDGs and ethanol that manage to bring this thing a little higher?
I think long term, but I don't know if it's going to be revealed on Wednesday. It's like, Todd, man, my name's Mr. China, and I'm going to buy some corn. You better get it bought before I do. I think it's going to be one of those situations where if there is a breakdown on the commodities and so forth, it's going to be more down the road. I think the long-term outlook for corn is fairly strong from the standpoint that was the situation we were in before the African swine fever kicked in and before this trade dispute kicked in also. So I know we have ample supplies over the near term, but if you push on out 6 months to a year from now, I believe there's going to be some corn, DDGs, and ethanol business to Asia.
On Friday, Lance Honig told us that 8% of the corn crop was still standing. That was put into the on-farm storage capacity. I'm wondering whether you've talked to enough people since then to get an idea of what farmers told USDA in the survey about how they think those 8% of acres will yield.
I've not talked to anybody directly that reported that, but I do appreciate your update there Friday afternoon and letting me know that was the number, 8%. Thank you very much. But because that was one of the numbers that was talked about, but I didn't see anything, any wordage on it. But man, 8%, that still means there's a lot of bushels out there or a lot of acres still subject to, you know, what's going on with those acres. I believe it's 2% of the beans. So, you know, still a lot of unknowns. You know, the questionability is the standability of the cropping through here. Not only are we seeing a lot of moisture take place, but a lot of wind. So how they handle this harvest loss that's in the bin for, say, one farm storage harvest loss, we'll have to address that as we move forward. For people out in the Dakotas that we visited with, they're not going to probably do a whole lot until we get into early March.
Anything for the livestock side related to trade or otherwise?
Well, that's the other thing, too, is we're just not seeing these huge pork sales take place. We are entering a phase in through here where we have ample pork numbers. Hog and pig report, weights are fairly good, so we're going to have to go through a lot of product in through here. If you're a speculator, we're watching the June hogs about another dollar lower. That's the old lows. That's where we need to see those hogs hold in through here. Otherwise, they could be subject to some additional selling interest. Cattle-wise, we're looking at the Feb's a premium to the cash market. But when you go back to a year ago this spring, we lost a lot of calves due to some unfriendly weather throughout here in the Midwest and even the Western Belt. So overall cattle numbers could be a little tight, and I think beef tonnage is going to come down here over the next 2 to 3 months.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very good. Take care.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report for Monday afternoon. You can hear him again anytime you'd like on demand on our website at willag.org or as a podcast. Check us out in the Google Play Store, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and, of course, the NPR One app. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Todd Hubbs from the University of Illinois, agricultural economist. Thanks for being with us, Todd. On Friday of last week, the final crop production numbers were released by USDA for the 2019 growing season. They included, oddly enough, an update of the 2018 numbers as well. That's a little different. Doesn't usually happen. And then, of course, those rolled into the WASD figures. We also had a grain stocks number that was released that day, and the winter wheat seedings figures were out. Why don't you start with the changes they made for the 2018 growing season in corn?
Yeah, NAS lowered the 2018 corn acreage planted from 89.1 to 88.9, and they lowered harvested acreage 400,000 acres to 81.3 million acres. They kept the yield the same, but as they did this, they also raised 18-19 ending stocks to 2.2 billion bushels from 2.114. And simultaneously to all this, they lowered feed and residuals significantly. And that basically meant we carried in more supply into the 19-20 marketing year by changing those numbers. And you mentioned the grain stocks report. We had a little over 11.3 billion bushels in December 1st stocks, which was lower than, you know, a lot of the trade expected, which implies a really large first quarter use number. particularly in feed and residual. Now, there's still 8% of the crop out there, and that got incorporated into that grain stocks number. So there's still a lot of uncertainty about where that number is going to end up being before it's all said and done, because if they're willing to change 18-19 ending stocks, I assume they're willing to change 19-20 stocks as well. When we look at the 2019 crop, they lowered harvested acres 300,000 acres, but raised the yield a bushel to 168, which is a little bit surprising considering the kind of year we've had, but that's what the numbers say, according to NASS. And so overall, we had more carrying in. We used a lot more than maybe most expected in the first quarter. And right now we're looking at the 1920 marketing year. You know, USDA lowered ending stocks about 18 million bushels. So that's somewhat supportive, particularly with this trade deal coming on. So overall in corn, sort of a wash. More production maybe in the yield side than we thought. Less harvested acreage. More carry in, but we used more than we thought maybe in the first quarter, particularly with this large feed and residual number where we saw USDA raised 1920 feed and residual projections by 250 million bushels. So when we think about the use side of the corn balance sheet, feed and residual went up 250, but all other uses combined went down 95. So, you know, we got a little bit of a wash there with that huge feed and residual number, which makes use look stronger despite higher production.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about this as you tell me about it, and I'm thinking, did they double dip in the feed residual number, relatively speaking? I mean, because we had more carry-in, which clearly they took out of the feed and residual use, or used in that area. Plus, most believe that there are more livestock on feed, more units, and they're eating more. Am I thinking about that right? That, you know, they gobbled up what they brought in, plus they increased some more. So you ended up with 250 bushels.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've thought we've been using more feed than they've been saying since we've been talking over the last few few months. And it's all relative because feed and residual is an implied number. There's always some residual component.
Well, I say double dip for this reason. So if they and maybe I'm just thinking about this the wrong way. If they double dipped in the feed and residual usage, then it might show back up.
it could. It really does depend on what the final production numbers end up.
I'm not the analyst, so
right. Yeah. No, it implies a large feed and residual use in the first quarter. A huge feed and residual, over 2.6 billion bushels. Which puts us at a feed and residual use percentage for the marketing year much higher than the last few marketing years. So we may be feeding more than that, but that's a very, very large feed and residual number in the first quarter. So we'll see how it plays out over grain stocks reports the rest of the marketing year. Does that open us up to a potential bearish grain stocks report this marketing year? Yeah, I think it does. But we got to figure out what that 8% is, because that's in the stocks number. So once, and it doesn't look like we're going to hear anytime soon what those numbers end up being. So this is a definitely to be continued type of story. But overall for corn, it was somewhat supportive. And when you take into account that 8%, I think we need to talk about this a little bit. Wait, what's the quality of what's left out in the field? The use component of that could be much higher due to just poor quality and test weight. And so we're in one of those places, in my opinion, where, yes, the yield might have went up. Maybe. I'm still not convinced. But the yield might have went up. The acres may still come down. But the actual quality of the corn that we're going to be seeing from a lot of these late planted stuff requires a lot more blending and, you know, huge discounts. So quality corn will have a premium. So I think we're in one of those scenarios where we're in a wait-to-be-seen kind of mode. But in my mind, overall, I think the reports were supportive for corn prices a little bit. Not where I would like them to be or where I thought the production numbers would be, but still somewhat supportive.
All right. Old and new crop sales. What should farmers keep in mind?
Well, you know, today I'm talking about we're waiting on this trade deal. And I think the specifics of that deal when it comes out this week are important. there is room for China to buy corn and corn-related products in this deal, and I think they will, just how much. China's on record saying they won't go above their global quota for any individual country, and that's about 283 million bushels. But when you think about 2019 through November, they'd only imported around 13 million bushels from us. So there's plenty of upside potential there. It may not be all from us. Everybody has to remember that. It may not be all U.S. corn they import, but there's plenty of upside there. There's upside in distillers grains. There's upside in ethanol. The question is how much. I wouldn't get too carried away with this, but anything supportive. And so anything that helps boost our exports, I think is supportive for corn prices. Now, here in the Eastern Corn Belt, when you're talking about old crop cash prices, if you look at the stocks, a lot of the stock numbers in the Eastern Corn Belt are well down from last year when you take on-farm and off-farm storage. And we're seeing that in basis. You know, there's some really strong cash prices as we move into this year for corn. So in my mind, old crop corn marketing, if you haven't already marketed some or you're thinking about it, we're in one of those strengthening basis kind of scenarios, particularly here in the Eastern Corn Belt, with the potential for strengthening futures. Maybe not at the level, you know, we would like, but still there with the trade deal coming in once we get to specifics. So you're in a marketing strategy like delayed pricing or store and sell cash, or you may want to put a floor under some of the forward stuff. But in my mind, that's the kind of marketing strategy we're hearing in Illinois if you're still holding on to corn. So I think you can get good cash prices on corn, old crop corn here in Illinois as we move through 2020. New crop corn, and I've been on the record for this for a while, as you know, that I'm a big believer in trying to put a floor under some of those 2020 harvest prices. If you get to a price that you see in the futures market that you like, I know it's early and I know there's a lot of uncertainty about what you're going to plant, but I'm under the assumption that we're probably going to plant more corn acres in the U.S. this year. You know, if we get a little boost out of this trade deal and we see strengthening prices a little bit on the harvest contract, I think putting a floor under that, and there's a lot of ways to do that. You can use minimum price contracts. You can sell and buy. You know, there's a lot of ways to do it. Talk to an advisor, or you can work through your elevator. I'm a big believer in doing some of that as much as you're comfortable with, because to me, I think corn acres going up, I doubt very, you know, depending on the weather, we could see a production problem, but we could see a really good corn crop in 2020. And I'm not 100% confident this trade deal will still be in effect when we finally get to harvest. So there's a lot of political risk as well. So I would like everybody to take that into account and thinking about, you know, maybe putting a floor under some of these harvest prices if you can. And I think those prices may be above what you see in crop insurance if we get a nice rally out of this trade deal. So pay attention to the markets, work with your marketing people. If you don't have a marketing person, think about, you know, do I want to put a floor under some of this? That's where I'm at on corn.
And same for soybeans?
I feel the same way about soybeans, actually. Even though the reports for soybeans were basically a wash, we still have the same ending stocks number 1920, and there were some adjustments, and they slightly raised carry in on soybeans, but they lowered harvested acres 600,000 for the 2019 crop despite raising the bushel about 0.5 bushels an acre. So while we have slightly higher production, we're basically at the same use level. Now I don't think that 1.775 billion bushels of exported soybeans includes what could come out of this trade deal. I don't think WASDE and the folks at the Outlook Board are able to do that yet. So there may be some upside there. Having said that, I don't think you should get too carried away with the kind of bushel numbers you might hear from some market observers coming out of this trade deal. I think China will probably buy more soybeans from us. It'll look like substantially more. But we have to remember there's 4.5 billion bushels that looks like it's coming out of Brazil in this year's crop, and that's going to be a really strong competition in the world market for our soybeans, particularly if we see a rally in soybean prices related to China buying. So we may lose some market share in the rest of the world, which would mitigate some of our growth. Now, I do expect that export number to go up, but to think that it's going to revert back to, say, 2.1 billion bushels like we were a few years ago, I think is misguided completely. So having said all that, when we think about, will we do another 76.1 million planted acres of soybeans in 2020? That seems insane to me. We're going to up the acreage. It's just how much. And just like in corn, a big expansion in acreage, particularly if prices look good under this trade deal, will put pressure on that harvest price contract. So like getting a floor under some of that out of this rally, I think, is a good idea. So that's sort of where I stand on both those crops.
Thanks so much.
Yes, sir.
That's Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Don't forget to visit our website, willag.org. All of our ag programming, or most of it's there. You can listen to it on demand anytime you'd like. You can also find it in all of your favorite podcast apps. Now let's turn our attention to the cash grain market. The folks at the Andersons are here. Brian Stark in particular to talk about what's been happening locally. Thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today. We're past the USDA reports on Friday. I guess we're looking forward to the trade numbers on Wednesday, though most importantly, I think you think it would be better if we would see some actual trade with China at this point.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Todd. I think obviously we've been talking about the phase one signing for weeks now, and we're finally culminating in Wednesday's hopeful event, but it'd be nice to know some details and then some actual results. I think the trade obviously propped the bean market up in December a good 60, 65 cents, hoping that we'd see some actual results, and we just haven't seen that yet. You know, and export inspections today on the corn side were awful, and I think demand seems to be turning the corner a little bit, but we've got a really low bar that we've set, and I think demand as a whole needs a little bit of a boost, and it would help if we'd have an idea of what China is really looking to buy here in the short term.
What's the rest of the demand landscape look like? Of course, we got those numbers from USDA on Friday.
Yeah, I think obviously they adjusted feed usage to be in line more with the prior year, given the stocks adjustment we saw here in September coming in below expectations. Ethanol, obviously, margins have been slightly on the downtick here recently, but I think overall corn demand is struggling outside of the feed component, and we really need to see some sort of a boost, which none seems to be on the horizon. If you read between the tea leaves, it seems like the most likely come on by would be beans, pork, DDGs, and potentially ethanol. And so in a roundabout way, that could support an expansion of the livestock industry domestically, if they're going to look at DDGs, and then also potentially on the meal side moving forward, which tends to be a weight on the soybean complex right now. So I think ultimately we just need some numbers, and I think that's what the trade is grasping at. If not, we're going to be locked in ranges, I think, for the better part of 30 days until we get to the outlook forum at the end of February.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Not a problem.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons, joined us here on the Closing Market Report for a Monday afternoon. Each and every business day, we take a look at what's happened in the world of agriculture right here on Illinois Public Media. You can hear those programs on demand, in fact, if you'd like, off our website at willag.org, willag.org, or find us as a podcast in the Google Play Store, Stitcher, SoundCloud, the NPR One app, Apple Podcasts too. However you listen. Listen, thank you so much for taking your time to spend with us here at Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.